Chapter 13. Though Kniff did not know why the films were fogged, Marguerite Carlo appreciated his considerate attentions nonetheless. With a spark of hope, she said that, of late, she had felt a little better. But visiting doctors noted that was a statement not in accord with her appearance. When Catherine Wiley from the Consumers League met her in May 1924 as part of her independent investigation, she was shocked, calling her this poor, sick young thing who looked fairly transparent. The level of sheer suffering was difficult to witness. Wiley later wrote, "After seeing one of the victims, I can never rest until I have seen something done whereby I am assured it will not happen again." She resolved to stick to this thing until there is some action somewhere. And stick to it she did. She interviewed more of the girls, including Josephine Smith, but found her unwilling to discuss the subject while continuing to be employed by the corporation. Wiley left no stone unturned, also visiting Catherine Sharp and Edith Mead, who had nursed Molly Maggia through her terrible illness. The nurse had not forgotten her former boarder. "Miss Mead wishes," Wiley wrote, "to do anything that she can to prevent such a tragedy happening to anyone else." And Wiley felt exactly the same. Hearing of Hazel's mother's desire to claim compensation, she consulted a local judge to get his advice on how the families could take legal action. But here she learned that New Jersey law was set against the women. The state, in fact, had somewhat pioneering legislation. A new law had come in only that January that made industrial diseases compensable. But, and it was a big but, only 9 diseases were on the permitted list, and there was a 5-month statute of limitations, meaning any legal claim had to be filed within 5 months of the point of injury. Not only was radium poisoning, if indeed that was what the girls were suffering from, not on the list, but most of the girls had not been employed by USRC for years, let alone 5 months. The judge told Wiley frankly, "When radium poisoning is made a compensable disease, if ever, it would not be retroactive, so that, as far as these girls were concerned, nothing could be done." The families had hit the same brick wall. Stone broke and desperate, Marguerite Carlo was also now considering legal action in order to get some money to pay for her treatment, but neither she nor Hazel Kuza's family had been able to find a lawyer who would take the case without getting cash up front. As Wiley noted grimly, they have none. On 19th of May 1924, Wiley returned to the Department of Labour with the results of her investigation. She took them straight to the top, to Commissioner Andrew McBride, but he was furious to find out that the Consumers League had stuck its nose into the matter. When he learned that his deputy, Roach, had supplied Wiley with the women's names, he hit the roof. McBride summoned Roach to their meeting and, Wiley said, rebuked him in my presence in a severe calling down. Wiley wasn't daunted one bit by McBride's ferocity, however. She continued to argue with him. McBride, frustrated with this nagging woman, asked her what she wanted to happen. "An investigation by the US Public Health Service," she said immediately. "Put it in writing," he replied wearily. She did, at once. Even as Wiley was continuing to champion the women's cause, developments were afoot at the centre of all the trouble, the United States Radium Corporation. The drinkers had been busy assessing the results of all their tests, and now, on 3rd of June 1924, they delivered their full and final report to the firm. 15 days later, on 18th of June, Veit wrote to Roach at the Department of Labour to share the doctor's verdict. He didn't send the full report, which was lengthy, simply a table of the medical test results of the workers, which showed the employee's blood to be practically normal.